So we are discussing the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So generally whenever I give a class on a topic, I use a particular framework. So I call it Chit. Chit is, we try to expand our consciousness, Chitna. So we look at the context of what is going on. Then we'll look at some insights. And then we'll talk about some takeaways. What does it mean for us? So, now if we look at the context right now, what is happening over here? That we are in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam is a nested conversation. It's a conversation within a conversation within a conversation. And like that it goes on and on. At one particular place, this nesting goes on till seven layers. So the outermost is, we could say, Shukadev Goswami is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. Of course, we can have one more outer one. That is, Vyasadeva is writing to all of us. But Shukadev Goswami is speaking. Then, the outermost is, Suta Goswami is speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. And then within that, Suta Goswami to the sages. Then Shukadev Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. Then within that, currently we have Maitreya speaking to Vidura. And now within that, we have the sages, the Brahmanas, offering prayers to Lord Varahadev. So this is where we are right now. These prayers are going on in 3.13 right now. Of course, the entire chapter is not the prayers, but a major part of it is the prayers. Now, the prayers within the Bhagavatam are a major feature of the Bhagavatam. And this is one of the things that distinguishes the Bhagavatam from many of the other Puranas also. That the action, the stories, they are described, however, in the Bhagavatam, as compared to most of the Puranas, the prayers occupy a significant amount of time. Generally, if we consider in terms of the content, the Puranas, they have some common features. There are stories. By stories, we could mean there is a narrative of the stories. This person did this, that person did that. Then within the stories themselves, there are the dialogues that are there. Now sometimes, there are discussions themselves in place of the stories. That means the story is not much. Like the Bhagavad Gita is not a story, it's just a discussion. Just is not to minimize it. But it is to just contextualize that it's a discussion. Like Uddhav Gita is primarily a discussion. The events that led to the Uddhav Gita are relatively small. The discussion is very big. Now, these are there in almost all the Puranas. But the prayers, this is distinctive to the Bhagavatam. Or at least, we could say, not the prayers are distinctive, but the extent of the prayers, the length of the prayers. This is quite distinctive to the Bhagavatam. And one reason among many for this is that among the various books in the sacred canon, in the Vedic canon, the Bhagavatam is the book that faces death in the eye the most directly. So we all pray to God, but prayers, they become the most important when we ourselves are largely helpless. So the Bhagavatam is, in one sense you could say, it is a death, I won't say death-centered book, but death is in the background. If you see, it is a death-contextualized book. What does it mean? That if you consider where the Bhagavatam starts off and where the Bhagavatam ends, which is the two startings of the Bhagavatam, if we consider that we start with Yudhishthir Maharaj in the Bhagavatam, That's 1.789 onwards. Now Yudhishthir Maharaj, he is, for him, there is death is casting a long shadow. That the Kurukshetra war has already happened and it has devastated everyone. So the long shadow of death is there when the Bhagavatam starts in the first canto. Now as far as Parikshit Maharaj is concerned, so a shadow can be caused by something which is behind us and shadow can be caused by something in front of, ahead of us also. So Parikshit Maharaj, the shadow of death is ahead of him. It's going to come in 7 days. And many of the stories in the Bhagavatam also, even say Dhruva seeing, beholding the Lord, being insulted, going to the forest, beholding the Lord. The continuation of the story is not so much given in the Puranas, other Puranas. But in the Bhagavatam, it goes on till how Dhruva departs from the world. And sometimes some of the departures are also not necessarily described in very, are some of the departures may from material perspective not be very glorious. Like Rishabhdev, who gives such powerful instructions, gets burned in the forest fire. Or Krishna's own dynasty is destroyed in a brutal fratricidal war. So death is very much a prominent reality in the Bhagavatam. And not all the prayers are offered in the face of death. But it's like death is always the background reality. So that's one reason. Apart from that, the Bhagavatam's focus is much more on the Lord directly. So that is the theme which I'll be discussing in the session as we move forward. But here, what we will see about the prayers in general is that most of the prayers are more of, their prayers are more of glorification than, they're more about glorifying than about asking anything. Generally, whenever we approach some person, we seek some help from them. Now we'll praise them, how charitable they are, how much they have helped, or how much we have heard about them. It's not flattery, but it's just the proper way to approach. I need some help from you. So we glorify and then we ask for some help. In most of the prayers in the Bhagavatam, we could say the glorifying is almost 95%. And the praying is 5% or less than 5% also. Kunti Maharani, she's prays initially saying that her starting of the prayer is she doesn't want the Lord to depart. But then through the act of praying itself, there is evolution in her devotion. And she says, my dear Lord, please take away from me the desire that I should determine what you do. That whether you should stay here or whether you go to the Dwarkavasis, wherever you are, my dear Lord, all that I desire is, my heart always flows towards you. Twai me ananya vishaya matir madhupate sakrit. Rati mudvahata adha gange vaughamudanmati. When Bhishma is departing from the world, not even once does he pray that may my death be painless or let my death not happen. Or he doesn't pray anything at all. He doesn't ask anything. He doesn't even really ask so much that that maybe Pandavas should be happy or this or that. He doesn't ask. His focus is simply let my consciousness flow always towards you. So in that sense, these prayers are often demonstrating a pure reciprocation of love. So that's what we'll focus on. Now the same thing, the sages in most of the prayers, just now the Lord has destroyed a demon who was not just disrupting but devastating the earth. He has just destroyed Varahadeva, has just destroyed Hiranyaksha. And in the entire prayers, there's hardly any reference to Hiranyaksha. At least we'll see later on in Prahlad's prayers, when Hiranyakashipu is killed, Prahlad does, there are at least 3-4 verses which refer to the context, and he says, Hiranyakashipu was so powerful, everybody was scared of him, but you just effortlessly destroyed him. That I'm never not afraid of anything in this world, but I'm afraid of your anger. Sorry, afraid of, the people are afraid of your form, but I'm not afraid of your form, I'm only afraid of the illusions of this world. So here, it's almost like the much of the prayers You know, prayers can be context dependent and they can be context independent. Context dependent means in a particular time, in a particular place, there are prayers. And there are context independent prayers. So nowadays, say within especially Christianity, there is a rejuvenation of prayers. There is a Christian prayer app which has become one of the most popular apps among spiritual apps in the Play Stores. So now most of the prayers there are very context dependent. When you have lost a loved one, what should you pray? If you have got a terrible health diagnosis, what should you pray? If you are feeling depressed, what you should pray? Now, these are important prayers. I'm not saying anyway that they are not. We all face specific challenges in life. And if we have some guidance about how to offer prayers in that way, we should do that. I have written a book on prayers inspired by Bhagavad Gita, where I'm talking about how we can take the Gita's verses and connect them with our heart and offer prayers. So there are context-dependent prayers which we can often relate with. If somebody has hurt us terribly, you know, how to let go, how to forgive. These are good prayers to have. But most of the prayers in the Bhagavatam, so the Bhagavatam's prayers are largely context independent. That is, the focus is not on me and the problems I'm facing. The focus is on you, O Lord. And I just want to remember you and I want to be absorbed in you. So in many ways, if we consider what is spiritual growth, so I've now shifted to the insight part now and we'll come to the specific prayer. But so I talked about Bhagavatam has these prayers, which is a focus, and the prayers are largely about glorifying the Lord. So normally for us, the world is very big. And Krishna, even if he exists, is small. And it's okay, yeah, God is there somewhere, I have to pray to him. But I have this person is troubling me, and this is going wrong, and that is going wrong, and that is going wrong. When preaching, we'll say, the only problem in the world is a lack of Krishna consciousness. But the problem in my life is my authority does not respect me. Or my subordinates don't listen to me. So, you know, we say Krishna is the biggest reality, but quite often, the world and its problems become much bigger for us. And that's not wrong, because we have to deal with those problems. But the problems occupying a lot of our headspace is a problem. So, as we grow spiritually, the world becomes smaller and Krishna becomes bigger. And that's why, when we come to this level, when we pray to Krishna, it is not so much that, Krishna, you help me free me from this problem, or thank you that you freed me from this problem, or when, O Lord, will you free me from this problem? That is not that important. That Krishna and remembrance of Krishna and absorption in Krishna becomes the most important thing. So quite often, most prayers, when they're context dependent, we could say this is more like a spiritual starter. Stage. It's good that, but here a person has become a spiritual seer. That when we become a spiritual seer, we come to Krishna to become immersed in remembering him. And that's, if we look at the content of this prayer, what is being offered, there are many aspects to the prayer, but I'll focus on a couple of them. That if we go back to, okay. Namo namaste akhila mantra devata dravyaya sarva kratave kriyatmani. So if we consider one's spiritual growth, in general, now we can say that in our life, we have two things in life's journey. We have the ends and the means. That means, what do I want to achieve and how will I achieve this? So if we consider the ends and means, okay, a student may say, oh, I want to get good marks in my exam. That is the ends. And what is the means? Okay, I have to study regularly. I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do that. So in life, we have ends and means. Now, if we consider the evolution could be that a person in tamoguna, they have practically no ends and no means. They are simply existing. Nobody literally lives without ends and means, but maybe their ends and means are what? Okay, I just want to escape from life. And people will spend time watching Netflix, playing video games, just reading random stuff on social media. So in tamoguna, there is no clear goal to pursue in life. And such people fall prey to conspiracy theories and this and that. You know, if we are not committed to something, we'll be distracted by anything. So in tamoguna, there are no ends and there are no means. Now, when we come towards rajoguna, in rajas, we have ends and we have means. Both become a little clearer. Now, because no ends, no means, here it's largely escapist living. So in rajoguna, the ends are materialistic. And sometimes the means can be religious or they can be non-religious. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about people who are pious materialists. They're not not everybody who's materialistic is necessarily impious or godless. India is experiencing a cultural rejuvenation after the building of the Rama temple and other things. But it's interesting that while the cultural rejuvenation is happening, materialism is also increasing. It's that cultural path, people are going towards, somewhat spiritually, they're becoming receptive or at least interested, but it's not non-materialistic. So in rajoguna, there's some interest in God. So God, the world is the end and God is the means. Okay, I want to achieve certain things. How do I achieve them? I have to pray to God. So generally speaking, the first two lines, even Vedic context, most people were pious materialists. And there's one Western author, he read the Rig Veda. When Europeans came to India, he said, the Rig Veda is the most materialistic religious book in the world he has ever read. Now, what do you mean by materialistic religious book? It is basically describing, okay, if you have this problem, chant this mantra. If you have this issue, you do this. If you want to destroy your enemy, do this. If you do this, do this. So the idea is that there are many mantras mentioned, but the mantras are meant to achieve certain ends. Like mantras are associated with some celestial weapons. And through that, we can attack and destroy an enemy. So the idea that the end is God, that is not very prominent in the Karmakanda section. In the Karmakanda section, the idea is the means is God in many ways. Not only God, we have to work in this world also. Nahi suptasya simmasya pravishanti mukhe mruga. A lion cannot just lie with open mouth and a deer will come into its mouth. A lion also has to endeavor. But we humans understand that my endeavor alone is not enough. There is some higher being and I need to propitiate that being also. So this is the level of pious materialism. From there, once we come to some level to sattva. In sattva, the means quite often becomes religious. And the ends, they become spiritual in the sense that it could be Krishna or it could be moksha. This world is a place of suffering and fulfilling desires itself does not lead to freedom from suffering. Now, for all of us, when we talk about purification or purifying our desires, what does it mean? Practically speaking, we all need to get this desire, this realization that fulfillment of desires does not lead to fulfillment of heart. And in one sense, we all know it, But when a desire comes up, we tend to forget it. Oh, I want to eat this, I want to watch this, I want to meet this person, I want to have this relationship, I want to get this position. Nowadays, people, everybody wants to be a social media influencer. So what happens is, we may have our desires, but fulfilling our desires does not lead to fulfillment of heart. That realization comes to some extent in sattva. And then when that realization comes, then we start thinking that, okay, what should I be doing in my life? Rather than pursuing my desires, either in sattva somebody says, let me give up my desires entirely and try to become desire free. Or if we come towards bhakti, we align our desires with the Lord. Not that we give up desires, but let me desire to serve the Lord. Let me desire to fulfill the desire of the Lord. And that is the, if you see the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita is, Karishye Vachanam Tava. I will do your will. So Shuddha Sattva or pure bhakti is where the ends is clearly Krishna. And the means can be many, but we understand the means come from Krishna. We are aware very clearly that my means come from Krishna. So in Rajoguna, a person who may be very talented, very talented speaker or a good business person, a good manager. Now they tend to become proud because they think I am the means. My ability are the means. But the Bhagavad Gita says, Paurusham Nrushu. All human ability comes from Krishna. Krishna says, I am ability in human beings. So when we understand that my ends is Krishna and the means to pursue that ends also comes from Krishna. So actually, the only thing we bring into the world is our desire to serve. The ability to serve is given by Krishna. The facility to serve is also given by Krishna. What we bring into the world in any area is actually the desire. So once we bring in, so if we consider in bhakti, bhakti not in the terms of the internal remembrance, but in terms of service. So what do we need? We need ability. Bhakti is about serving. So we need the ability to serve. We need the facility to serve. And then we want the result, the reward of the service. The reward may not be for us, but we want the reward. If we consider, and then there is the desire to serve. So actually, the ability comes from Krishna, the facility comes from Krishna, the reward comes from Krishna. It is only the desire that comes from us. Now, we could even say that the inspiration for that desire comes from Krishna. That it is Krishna who brings us in the association of devotees who are filled with so much eagerness to serve that I should also do some service. Or it is Krishna who may give us some sublime spiritual experiences. We come and take darshan, we participate in kirtan, and we feel such extraordinary experiences. We feel that, this is what I want to do in my life. This is what I want to experience more and more and more. So broadly, when we say the desire can come from positive impetus and from a negative impetus. The positive impetus could be more of association. We see devotees who are dedicated, who are inspired. And it could come from our spiritual experiences. Now, the negative inspiration generally comes from frustration. That when we pursue other things, and those things, they don't lead us to anything of value. So, generally, beyond this, the third one is our own intelligence and our contemplation with our intelligence. So, among these three, if you consider the association, the experiences and the intelligence, the association and the experience, that is not in our control. Sometimes you may get very inspiring association. Sometimes you may not get such inspiring association. I was in Florida and I was in Texas doing a program at one devotee's home. And well, there was a notice, there was like a quote, humorous quote in their home. It says that we look forward to all our guests. To some guests, we look forward to their arriving. To some guests, we look forward to their departing. Which category you fall in depends on how you behave while you are here. Now, the idea is, for all of us, there are some people who bring happiness wherever they go, and some people bring happiness whenever they go. So, even in association, for us, it's not that every single devotee's association will be inspiring. Some devotee's association will be sometimes quite a bit demanding also. I was doing once a devotee relationship seminar, and when we are practicing bhakti, we have to tolerate many things. So what all do we have to tolerate? So one devotee raised his hand very enthusiastically. He says, "So yes, what all do we have to tolerate?" He said, "We have to tolerate devotees." So I said, "Yes, that's a good realization. And if we keep practicing bhakti, we'll also come to the realization that devotees are tolerating us." Isn't it? So, yasma no dujate loko, loka no dujate chaya. That we try to live in such a way that we don't disturb others and we don't get disturbed by others. But my point is that inspiring association may sometimes be there, sometimes not there. Spiritual experiences we may or we may not get all the time. But what we can have is our own intelligence. Or we study scripture and we make sure that our intelligence remembers and reminds us why Krishna is the most desirable reality for me. So that's the last part of this verse where it says that Jnanaya Vidya Gurave Namo Namaha. So Dravyaya Sarva Kritave Kriyatmane, I talked about it, how you are the ultimate goal for achieving everything. You are the ultimate purpose of everything. But that purpose we cannot realize till we have some Vairagya Bhaktya. We have some Vairagya, some detachment from our own desires. Bhaktya Atma Jaya Anubhavita. So Atma Jaya Anubhavita, what does it mean? This is not Atmaja. Atmaja is somebody's relative. It is Atma Jaya. Atma here refers to the mind. It's our mind is filled with many, many desires, and those desires distract us. But when we have sufficient level of control over our mind, Atma Jaya. So if I'm coming and taking darshan of the Lord, but I'm thinking, oh, I have to meet this person, I have to tell this person, will this person listen to me? Will I be able to distribute books today? How much will my score? We are filled with all those desires, then we cannot really relish the presence of Krishna, even when we are in His presence. So Atma Jaya Anubhavita. Anubhavita, when we experience, we have that experience, that Anubhava, Anubhava and Anubhava. Within that experience, we have some emotion that comes. So Atma Jaya Anubhavita. So for that to happen, that can happen spontaneously at times by Krishna's mercy. But for most of the times, we need to sustain it with our intelligence. So Jnanaya Vidya Gurave. That Jnana, the Jnana to persevere in our bhakti, that comes from you, O Lord. You are the Vidya Gurave. You are the person who is the giver of wisdom. Prabhupada quotes that at 10.10 in the Bhagavad Gita, Tisham Satat Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upayantite. That when we have a favorable attitude towards serving Krishna, then Krishna will give us the intelligence of how to come to Him. So that is the last point I'll conclude with over here. That for us, the takeaway. You know, this is quite often a catch-22 kind of situation for us. That what comes first? Does the desire, like over here I said, that the ability to serve, the facility to serve, the reward for service, all this will come from Krishna. The desire has to come from us. But then the sustainable basis for the desire is our intelligence. Sustainable basis. We can say we can have our intention, we can have our determination. But the determination, buddhya dhriti grahitaya. Krishna says that our intelligence is sustained by our determination. So what comes first? The desire to serve or the intelligence to serve? So which will come first? Desire to connect with Krishna or the intelligence to connect with Krishna? So is it that first we get the intelligence and then we get the desire? Or first we get the desire and then we get the intelligence? Now, what do you think? Desire comes first. Yes, if you consider 10.10 is indicating this. Krishna says, you do bhajatam priti purvakam. When you do bhajatam priti purvakam, that means you have some desire for me. You have some positive, affectionate disposition towards me. Then I will give you the intelligence to serve. Now this is what Krishna talks in 10.10. But if you go to a little earlier, 3.43, there he says, evam buddhehe param buddhva samsthabhyatmanam atmanah. With your intelligence, situate yourselves on the spiritual platform. With your intelligence, understand that you are a soul and that you are meant to connect with the whole. And thus, you can go beyond mundane desires. Thus, you can jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasatam. So, where do we start in our spiritual life? Does intelligence, do we get the intelligence to when we wake up in the morning? You know, is it that we wake up and we feel, oh, today I have to go for the morning program. Do I have to do chant the holy name? I would love to do that. Or is it that, okay, is I feel like doing it, I want to do it, or, you know, this is the right thing to do, this is the important thing to do, I'll do it. So that is the idea that this is where yena kena prakarena, from wherever we can start. It is, some days we can feel our way to actions, some days we have to act our way to the feelings. Some days we feel our way towards action means we feel like coming to the temple and we come to the temple and take darshan. Some days we don't feel like it, but we act our way. With our intelligence we act, and by acting gradually the feeling will come. And that's why somehow or the other, that is the operational principle. At some days, so basically the desire is associated with our mind, and then the intelligence of course associated with our buddhi, mana and buddhi. So Krishna says, mai arpita mano buddhir maam evaishasya asamshayah. With your mind and intelligence both offered to me, you will come to me. But for us right now, sometimes our mind is offered, sometimes intelligence is offered, but at least something should be offered to Krishna. And that's how we will keep moving towards Krishna. So we can pray, we may have a little desire, with that little desire we start practicing bhakti, we start doing some activity, and gradually our intelligence starts becoming clearer. Or sometimes we have a little intelligence, with that we do an activity, and then slowly the desire starts awakening. But because neither of these are steady for us, that's why our bhakti is right now fickle. But gradually speaking, our intelligence can be strengthened, our mind can be purified, and then we'll become steadier in bhakti, and the experience of joy will also become deeper and richer for us when we become more absorbed in Krishna. Generally, it is easier to maintain a steady intelligence than to maintain a steady desire. So that's why the conviction of the intelligence is more important. Because the desires, we can't really predict which desire we'll have when. We can try to have the desire, but we cannot control that. So in that sense, at our stage, the buddhi is more important. Although ultimately we want the desire and the emotion, but the buddhi is what is required for us to sustain ourselves. But it is not constantly fighting against our desires. We purify our desire so that gradually we can come closer and closer to Krishna. So I'll summarize what we discussed. Our topic was, you know, broadly, you know, how we grow spiritually. So within that, I talked about three distinct things. First was the context, CIT. So context was, we discussed about how this is the fourth level nesting. the conversation with Sutta Goswami and sages, Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, Vidura and Maitreya, and then there are the sages and Varahadev. So in this conversation, there are prayers going on. Now we discussed the characteristic of the prayers. Prayers are, they are a distinctive feature, distinct in Bhagavatam as compared to other Puranas, where there are stories, there are dialogues, there are elaborate discussions, but elaborate prayers, they are a distinctive feature of the Bhagavatam. And even within these elaborate prayers, discussed about how we could have prayers which are contextual, and there are prayers which are not so much contextual, they are universal. So the contextual prayers come when for us the world is very big, then dealing the context is what is important. But when we grow spiritually, then the world becomes small, Krishna becomes big, then our prayers are not so much dependent on the context. So then in the insight, I talked about the spiritual journey of how we grow, that see, if we are in tamas, most people have no means and no ends. Right? They just want to live, exist, escape from life. In rajas, which is the place where people have means that are worldly, that are materialistic, but materialistic, and the ends are, they could be either religious or non-religious. So most of the description in the Bhagavatam is from here. The Bhagavatam is not really largely focusing on tamasic people. It's talking about people who are pious, but for them to become spiritual. So then in sattva, what happens? Gradually our, sorry, not means and ends, here it is. The ends are materialistic and the means are religious. And gradually for us, the ends start becoming non-material. We understand that fulfillment of desires does not lead to fulfillment of arts. And the means, they like are a mix of material and non-material. We start whatever means we use. But as we become in pure devotion, Shuddha Sattva, that's when we understand the means, the ends is Krishna, and the means also comes from Krishna. The ends and means both become Krishna-centered. Then we discuss what are the takeaway for us. That, actually then this means that also talked about one more thing, that for service, broadly we need four things. The desire to serve, the ability to serve, the facility to serve. Ability means somebody has speaking or singing ability. Facility is they're invited to some kirtan program, they're invited to give some classes. And then there's the reward of service. So all of these come from Krishna. The desire, it is what comes from us. But even when the desire comes from us, it just doesn't come only from us. It can come from association. It can come from spiritual experiences. It can come from intelligence. So I discuss what is the takeaway. Somehow or other, yena kena prakarena. What do we start with? The desire to serve or the intelligence to serve. That sometimes we feel our way to actions, sometimes we act our way to feelings. So both could be true, but the important thing is from wherever we start, that is how we move ahead. Krishna talks about both possibilities. So somehow or the other, we continue in our bhakti till we come to the point where both our desire and intelligence will be directed towards Krishna, and that's when we'll become fully absorbed in Him. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So any quick question or comment? Okay, let's go.
Thank you, Guruji. Let's say there's a student who has a desire to study in the most prestigious university of the country. He works hard, gets admission. So in this case, there'll be he'll experience some happiness, some sense of achievement, some contentment. So when you made the statement that fulfillment of desires doesn't lead to fulfillment of heart, can you please elaborate on this?
Yeah. So if we achieve something, does it bring fulfillment? Well, yes. The question is, how long does it last? So generally, you could have what we, the fulfillment of desire, that could be in tamoguna, rajoguna, sattvaguna. So for example, tamoguna, somebody drinks. They drink and they feel some pleasure over, they feel some relief, some feel some escape. But how long does it last? In rajoguna, somebody may think that, okay, I want to win this award, or I want to get this fame, I want to get this recognition. Then that lasts a little longer. So if somebody is sattvaguna, okay, I just don't want to get the best student award, I don't just want to come first in my class, I want to actually gain mastery over the subject. I love this physics, I love this maths, and I want to understand it. Now that attraction to the subject will actually give greater satisfaction or more lasting satisfaction than the achievement from mastering that subject or achievement associated with that subject. So generally, if we consider the every desire when fulfilled, it gives some pleasure. But how long does it last? So if we see that ultimately, if I'm studying this subject, that is to please Krishna. Krishna has given me this ability and I will use it in Krishna's service. So then what happens? That we may do various activities. Dharma svanushita pumsam. Vishvaksena kathasuina nyotpadi edratim shrama evahi kevalam. That whatever we do, ultimately the success of every day is not how many things in our to-do list we are able to tick off. The to-do may even be for Krishna. But the success of every day is that did I come to know Krishna a little better? Did I come to love Krishna a little more? So that is the Shuddha Sattva definition of success. And that's what will bring out the most lasting fulfillment. Thank you. Yes, please.
Thank you, Guruji. Wonderful. I'm picking up something here about the development of steadiness. Could you help us with the next step to developing taste a little?
So could I elaborate? The next step. So how does steadiness develop? Are there any steps in that? Generally, one of the key things for developing steadiness is to feel a sense of responsibility or to take up responsibility. So for example, if you are attending this class, you know, you may be partly attentive, you may not be partly not so attentive. But suppose after this class, whatever you're going to speak, whatever you hear, you have to speak on a similar topic after this. And then you are going to speak. Then when you take responsibility for sharing the philosophy, then what happens? We start hearing much more. So in general, there are various kinds of dhyan. There is, in the Bhakti Sambhut Sindhu, it is said, there is Nama Dhyan, Rupa Dhyan, Leela Dhyan, and Seva Dhyan. We remember the names of the Lord, his form, his pastimes, and his service. Now, all of these can be very absorbing, but in general, we can take the most responsibility for Seva Dhyan. That when I take some responsibility for some service, then it is easier to, in a sustained way, remember. In a very advanced stage, we can be absorbed constantly in Nama Rupa, and Leela Dhyan. But many devotees, sometimes when they start practicing bhakti, they get so much joy in bhakti, they just want to retire from life. They say, I want to retire, I want to go to stay in Vrindavan, stay in Mayapur, or I want to just turn away from life. And it's a noble aspiration, but quite often we may just be seeking escape from the troubles of life. If you go to Vrindavan or Mayapur, someplace like that, but if we don't have some tangible service over there, we can't really do Nama, Rupa, Leela, Dhyan constantly. How many classes can we hear? How much Shastra can we read? How can we chant 64 rounds or 128 rounds every day? It's going to be very difficult. So we need some tangible service So that's how, if we take responsibility for our service, that is one way we'll become steady. And then gradually, so start with taking up responsibility, that's one aspect. The other is find out which is a way in which we are more naturally or easily attracted towards Krishna. So somebody may like music. Then hearing kirtans or participating in kirtans is what much more easily will come for them. Somebody may like philosophy. Not just philosophy in general, they may like a particular speaker. So this is in the Bhakti Samasindhu called as Uddipan. Just like there are sensual stimuli. Like somebody is an alcoholic. They're triggered whenever they see alcohol. But you know, it's not that every alcohol might trigger them. They might be not triggered by wine, they might be triggered by whiskey or beer or whatever. Some things trigger them. Like sense objects, not that, say, when a man sees any woman, that person get agitated. Maybe. But some objects trigger us more than others. So like that, the same way for women and men also, the other way around. But the point is that with respect to Krishna also, there may be certain manifestations that attract us more. We come and take darshan every day, but some days the dressing might be such that we just feel very attracted. So maybe we take a picture of that, keep it in our phone, and whenever mind gets agitated, look at that. So take responsibility and cherish the spiritual stimuli that attract us to Krishna. And that way, we can make ourselves steadier in bhakti. Okay. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki, Itai Gaura Premanand.